Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, so week 16 against the Patriots brought everything back down to earth for both the Bills as a team and the fan base, I think, Nate, because the team and the fans, we're riding pretty high after, for some reason, after beating the Detroit Lions and losing a couple of competitive games to the Dolphins and the Jets, but New England's still New England, and the Bills are still the Bills. And that's pretty much all there is to say after that game.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Belichick doesn't really lose rookie quarterbacks. His game planning is pretty much beyond any other coach in the league. Especially doesn't lose rookie quarterbacks at Foxborough. And that game went basically as I expected it to. I expected the Patriots to struggle on offense. I guess the one thing I will say I didn't expect from that game was the Patriots running for 280 yards, or how much they ran for, 250 yards, whatever it was.
Yeah, that was kind of an embarrassment for the Bills' defense to give up that much on the ground. It's tough when you're on the field, a lot of the season. But, Tom Brady didn't have a good game. This was Josh Allen's worst game, since coming back from injury. And can't say I'm all that surprised. He did have some touchdowns dropped, two of them by Robert Foster.
Yeah, Foster dropped two? I thought Foster only dropped one.
Well, the one was a contested catch. I guess it's probably wrong to call it a drop, but a good receiver comes down to that ball, I think, more often than not.
Okay, yeah, I think there were two balls in the end zone that should have been caught, one by Foster and one by Jason Kroom. Or Logan Thomas, sorry. The other Foster one was, yes. Okay, if we're talking that, then you could argue, I guess, that he had three touchdowns dropped if you wanted to.
Yeah, and how much does that change the perception of that day? If the Bills punch in two more touchdowns and, they only lose by a couple points as opposed to, where they just trailed by three scores most of the game and got a garbage time touchdown at the end.
It definitely would change the perception of the game a lot for a lot of fans, which is part of the problem with I think a lot of fans have when they're looking at these games and how players played, because even if he completes both those throws and he ends up with three touchdowns in the game, he still had a really bad game.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can really... You have to be able to separate, especially with a guy like Josh Allen, separate the statistics from the actual play on the field.
Yeah, and Nate, I think that's something that's kind of been unfair to Josh Allen over the last few weeks, is the national media is just kind of picking out the stat line and saying, oh, this guy's not any good, he's inaccurate. Well, that's not really true, because he played pretty well for a stretch of three or four games there. But I also don't think he was as good as Bills fans thought he was over that period. I think the answer lies somewhere in the middle if you're being unbiased.
Yeah, and I would generally agree with that. I think Josh Allen has been decent. He's been better than a lot of us have expected him to be, a lot of us did expect him to be, which I think plays into the perception that he's had a really good stretch of games and is playing really well, because it's just above our expectations. But it's still not great, but taking everything he's done this season into consideration, I am very hopeful for the next 5-10+ years with him as the Bills quarterback. I think he's a guy that, whether or not he becomes the quote-unquote elite quarterback that a lot of people think you need to win a Super Bowl, he is, I think, going to be good enough to be a starter in the league for a long
time. I think that's
a
pretty good assessment, Nate. I mean, like we said a few weeks ago after he had the good game against the Dolphins, I think the floor is high enough that it's not going to be a complete disaster like we thought it could have been the night they drafted him. I think there's enough raw talent there. Even if he doesn't really develop into a superstar, it's going to be a guy you can throw out there. It's not going to be Blake Bortles, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make here. So with this defense, if he gets just a little bit better, they put some talent around him on the offensive line and the skill positions, I think the Bills are going to be fine moving forwards.
Yeah, and outside of just Josh Allen, a lot of what there is to look forward to, I mean, the Bills have the third most cap space in 2019, and they have the most cap space, I think, available in 2020, almost $140 million in cap space. They have a ton of draft picks to work with here. They could have a top five draft pick next year, depending on how this weekend plays out. There's a lot of pieces in place for the Bills to do just what you're talking about, Alex, which is get more talent around the rookie quarterback, who has pretty much been the best player.
Yeah, you know, we talked about Zay Jones for a while, probably an 8-week stretch in the middle of the season where he was the best player on the offense, and he has just disappeared over the last few weeks. I don't know what's going on with that. To be honest with you, I haven't really wasted my time watching the All-22 once the season was over with. I kind of lost interest in that, but you can just tell from watching the game live that Zay Jones hasn't been the same player that he was in the middle of the season. And, you know, the number one receiver has become Robert Foster, an undrafted free agent. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and Foster's shown a lot of signs that he's going to develop into a guy who's going to be a great option for Josh Allen going forward, and it's clear that they have a pretty good rapport on the field, and he looks for him a lot. And the work that the front office has done bringing in guys who were maybe overlooked by other teams and didn't get drafted. I mean, they have an undrafted free agent starter rookie on both sides of the ball. And I think both those guys are guys that are going to be pieces for the team long term. And to find that in just 1 year, two undrafted free agents that are going to be stars.
Yeah, and I think it was before the season, Nate, we talked about, I think it was the 2015 or 2016 Seattle Seahawks, one of those good teams that either went to the Super Bowl or pretty deep into the playoffs. They had like 20 undrafted free agents on their 53-man roster to start the year. And I could see that's something the Bills are working towards, to find, you know, the guys that are valued. You don't have to pay them a lot. They provide good depth. Maybe you find a couple gems in Foster and Wallace that can start for you. I mean, gem relative to what you're expending to get them, which is just signing a guy after the draft. But I think you're right, Nate. They have a lot of draft picks next year. They're towards the later end of the draft. I think round four and after are most of the additional picks. But that's where you can find depth. It doesn't have to be a starter. And especially on defense, you can start to fill the gaps, you know, of guys like Kyle Williams, Lorenzo Alexander, with some later round talent that can hopefully back up, you know, the younger guys like Matt Milano and Harrison Phillips that should step into those starting roles.
Yeah, and even if you find one starter at the back end of a draft each year, I mean, you find another Matt Milano type piece in the fifth round, that's a really good haul. I mean, you're probably not going to find another guy as good. Milano is really good. You're probably not going to find another guy that good. But to get pieces in the draft, if most of the draft picks can work out, that is a very good sign long term. I think Brandon Beans and the staff have done a really good job since he's come in of identifying the right players.
Yeah, I mean, they found Taron Johnson in the fourth round of last year's draft, and he was really good as a nickel corner. Fortunately, his season was cut short by injury, but they've shored up that spot, you know, for at least 3 or 4 years here with Taron Johnson. And if Levi Wallace can be competent at cornerback too, I still think that's something they have to address in the draft or free agency. You know, I don't know if you want to roll with Levi Wallace as your future corner opposite Tre'Davious White, but it looks a hell of a lot better than, you know, where we started the season with Vontae Davis quitting at halftime.
Yeah, I mean, by Pro Football Focus, which Alex and I both tell you, we like Pro Football Focus as a tool, but it's not like the end-all, be-all. But Levi Wallace and Taron Johnson are both in the top five of rookie cornerbacks by Pro Football Focus grade this year. Levi Wallace is second, and Taron Johnson is fifth. And if Levi Wallace can continue that level of play, I do think he is a guy who's going to at least get the opportunity to start opposite Tre'Davious White.
Yeah, I mean, as we close out 2018 here, Nate, Levi Wallace is the starter going into the offseason. I mean, there's no one visible on the depth chart or, you know, a clear free agent target that, you know, would challenge him for that job. So I think it has to come in the draft probably. So I think you're right. Wallace could be the guy going forwards. And he's one of those guys that's good at what they ask him to do. It's not like he's some physical freak, like, you know, some prototype corners, but he's good at what they ask him to do as the second corner in a zone-based scheme.
Yeah, and when you have a guy like Tre'Davious White, who outside of the last few weeks where he struggled a bit, he was much better against the Patriots this past Sunday, who can really lock down the number one receiver on the opposing teams. All you need is a guy that can do his job on the other side of the field. You don't necessarily need that second.
Yeah, and we saw that with EJ Gaines in the first year under Sean McDermott. You know, he was really good when he was out there on the field as just that zone-based guy. So I think the defense is going to be fine going forwards. Nate, I do want to touch on this graphic. I think it was from Football Outsiders that I sent you yesterday that shows the difference between an offense's adjusted net yards per attempt over, you know, their defense's adjusted net yards attempt allowed. And it's kind of absurd that the Bills are the third best defense for adjusted net yards per attempt, and the offense is dead last.
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me. Well, isn't their offensive net yards per attempt worse, like significantly worse than any, like than their defense allows? Isn't it like a whole yard worse?
Yeah, so they're the third ranked defense at 5.14 adjusted net yards per attempt. The offense is 3.49, worse than the Arizona Cardinals. There's not words to describe how bad that is.
Yeah, and the good thing with that is there's nowhere really to go but up, and with a full offseason to really learn the nuances of the NFL and to pick up, continue to grow that Josh Allen's going to have, and if they get him a few weapons, I expect the Bills' offense next year to at least be competent. And I think competent is all you need to be a playoff contender with.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the Bills have. There are a few bounces away from, you know, having 7 wins on the season. I guess you could probably say the same thing against Detroit. So they're probably where they should be. They should be around 6 or 7 wins. If you make this offense competent, that's a 9, 10, 11 win team with that defense. And I'm just looking at the chart here. If you give them the Cleveland Browns offense with this defense, they'd be, you know, up there with the Super Bowl contenders in this measure, you know, of the difference between their offense and their defense in adjusted net yards per attempt.
Which is pretty crazy to think about, that you give them another rookie quarterback with an offense that's been decent but not great, and they're one of the best teams in the league by that metric. And it's something that we've talked about quite a bit this year, because the Bills have an elite defense. They're one of, in my opinion, 3 elite defenses in the NFL. And the other 2 are in the playoffs. Well, most likely. The Ravens might not make the playoffs, but that's a whole other story. I really think the Bills, all they need is a semi-competent offense. The defense is going to continue to get better. They have a lot of really great young pieces. To be a contender for the next 5-7 years.
So that falls solely on Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, because they chose to address the defense first and just blow the offense apart. You know, we went and looked back at Tyrod Taylor's adjusted net yards per attempt over his 3 seasons in Buffalo, and all 3 of those years would have been good enough to make this Bills team a playoff team, you know, based on these metrics. So that's not to say that they should have kept Tyrod Taylor and all the pieces around them, because they had to get rid of that cap space. Otherwise, this defense wouldn't be that good. They wouldn't have all this cap space going into 2019. So basically, this offseason has to be the year of, you know, putting the pieces forward for the offense to be competent next year and good in 2020, you know, to be a real contender.
Yeah, that's something I want to touch on, is the Bills got moved on from Tyrod Taylor because they want to be better than an average offense. Yes, we're saying an average offense gets them in the playoffs, but that's not the organization's goal. It's not to make the playoffs. It's to win a Super Bowl. You can't do that with an average offense. Well, you can rarely do that with an average offense. There are a few teams in the past 20 years that have won a Super Bowl basically on defense. Really 2 that I can think of. And that's probably not going to win a Super Bowl, what Tyrod gave you, which is why they tore it down and are trying to build
Nate, it up. I think the simplest way to break it down is, when you look at a team like the Chiefs, they can score when they have to, which you need to win a Super Bowl, but they can't stop anyone when they have to, which is also key to win a Super Bowl. So the Bills have one piece of that. They can stop someone when they have to. Now, if they can, you know, put an offense together that can score when they need them to, then, you know, we're looking at a team that could be at the top of the AFC for, you know, a pretty good stretch.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun next, I think, 5 years in the NFL. There are so many really good young quarterbacks, and the next generation of quarterbacks is finally stepping in, and it's going to be really exciting to see which quarterbacks are able to elevate their teams above the rest. And Josh Allen's in a division now where he's going to be playing against one of these other young quarterbacks for a really long time. And the division could certainly turn from being a Patriots division to being a Bills and Jets division.
We've said it for, you know, the better part of half the season now, that Tom Brady hasn't looked like he's the same quarterback, and rightfully so. I mean, Father Time catches up to everyone. And if the Patriots win the Super Bowl this year, I don't think it's going to be because of Tom Brady, unless he suddenly flips a switch here in the playoffs. But you're right, Nate. The Bills and Jets look better going forward than the other two teams in the division. And, you know, that's more than a lot of teams in the AFC can say with aging quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And there are a significant amount of the aging quarterbacks in the NFL happen to be in the AFC. I mean, you have Brady,
Rivers,
Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco, I'll put in there, Phillip Rivers. There are a lot of older quarterbacks that have been with their teams for quite a long. I mean, Andy Dalton, you can put in that category, but he's not necessarily an elite quarterback, but he's been there forever. There are a lot of guys that are either on their way out or getting towards the tail end of their career. So the seeing the new guard come in, and some of the new guard is lighting up.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of fun to watch. So Nate, last thing I want to touch on, you know, we'll keep it short this week. There's not a whole lot to talk about except draft position with this last game against the Dolphins. I mean, the Bills, if they lose and the Jets win, and I think it requires some other teams to lose as well, the Bills can get the fourth pick in the draft. And if they win, I think they go all the way up towards 12, which is kind of a disaster when you think about it in terms of, you know, the guys you could be getting it for as opposed to 12.
Yeah, so if the Bills lose, the Bills are basically, they're rooting for the 49ers, the Bears, the Browns, the Broncos. They want those four teams to win, no matter what, no matter if they win or lose. And then if they win, they would need, the Buccaneers,
Giants,
the Lions, and the Raiders to win. The Giants, that's the other one. Yep. If the Bills lose and all of those teams I just named, the Giants, Bucks, 49ers, Bears, Browns, Broncos, Lions win, the Bills get the fourth pick. That's the best case draft scenario for Sunday. And if the Jags, Panthers, and Falcons win, and the Bills also win, there's a chance they end up.
Yeah, and this is an interesting scenario because the Dolphins are out of the playoff hunt. It sounds like they're going to move on from Tannehill, and like there's a lot of, people no longer believing in Gase there. It sounds like a team that's kind of quit, maybe. So it might be tough to lose at home to this Dolphins team. And I saw today that Tannehill's questionable, so he might not even play.
Yeah, I think in the it is interesting. I mean, the Dolphins, the one thing that I do think might be the case, the Dolphins could be motivated if they care about their coach, right? They could be playing for his job. It sounds like they're moving on from Tannehill. It sounds like they're moving on from the general manager, but Gase isn't necessarily gone yet from what I've read. So they could be playing for their job. I mean, it looks like the organization's about to hit the reset button. So I guess in a way, everyone's playing for their job. So that could bring them out a little more motivated. But Miami has not historically had too much success playing in Buffalo, especially.
Yeah,
in December.
I mean, these guys are professional athletes. They want to win. They're not going to go out there and throw a game. So it's kind of hard to predict what's going to happen Sunday. It's two teams that have nothing to play for, really, except maybe the Dolphins are playing to save their coach's job, which in that case, as Bills fans, we'll welcome that. We'll take the loss in Week 17 to move up that draft order. There's nothing ever for certain in the draft, but you certainly have, you know, the cream of the crop at 4 versus 12, where, you know, 8 of those guys that you might be interested in are off the board.
Yeah. And the trade value as well is another thing to consider. I mean, if you the Bills get the fourth pick, I would be surprised if McDermott and Bean didn't say, okay, we're going to trade this pick, and we're going to trade back and get some more picks, because the quarterback class is not very good, and there are going to be teams that are going to reach to go get one of those two quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I haven't looked at the trade chart for draft picks since last year, but just off the top of my head, I think the fourth overall pick could yield a couple firsts and, you know, maybe a mid-rounder.
Yeah, and that's the difference between the fourth and the 12th. I mean, you trade back at 12, the Bills probably wouldn't be trading back, but the value is significantly less. This is one time as a Bills fan where I'll probably be rooting for them to lose on Sunday. My ideal scenario is Josh Allen throws for like 250 yards and 3 touchdowns, and the defense has a rough game, and the Bills lose by a touchdown late or something. That would be
That's pretty much what happened against the Dolphins the first time. The Bills offense had a great day. The defense couldn't really get a stop when they needed to. Then the Bills couldn't score when they needed to. So I think a close loss would be good to close out the season, be competitive, but not hurt your team's draft chances. So, Nate, anything else you want to add before, you know, we wrap this up for this week?
I don't think so. I think, guys, we'll be back for a season-ending recap pod, and then we'll probably take a little bit of time, but we'll get back in one with one during the playoffs sometime, and get our thoughts, get everyone our thoughts on how the playoffs are going and what we think is going to happen. And we also need to go over our preseason predictions and see if Alex.
Yeah, that'll be fun. The Colts have a chance to win that AFC South, so I might be looking smart there. It's kind of a lot of crazy scenarios going this last week, Nate. 4 teams have a chance at that one seed, and I can't remember the last time that's happened.
It's been a long time. There are some really fun games this weekend. The Bills game is probably the least exciting game of the entire NFL, the entire weekend for the NFL. I don't think there's another game that means less than the Bills game does on Sunday. But there are a lot of games that are really important, especially the 4 o'clock window on Sunday is going to be fun. There are a lot of important games in that 4 o'clock window. There are like 7 games at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm glad the NFL has figured that out to get all of those rolling at the same time, you know, kind of create an insane witching hour at 6 to 7 o'clock as opposed to 3 to 4, and then we'll get, you know, the playoff game between the Titans and the Colts at, you know, 8:20 on Sunday night. So it's going to be a fun weekend of football. I don't know if I'm going to watch too much of this Bills game, given that there's not much involved with it, like you said, Nate. So anything else you'd like to add before we wrap this up?
I think we're good. It's been a fun ride this season with watching the growth of Josh Allen, and I'm just really excited for the future of the organization. I'm more excited now than I've been.
That is an interesting point. This is probably the most optimistic I've been outside of, you know, that one playoff game last year in a really long time. So that'll bring us to an end of this episode of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Pollinger. Subscribe, download, give us a rating or a review wherever you get your podcasts, so others can find it and give it a listen. Feel free to share it with a friend as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Bills_breakdown. You can also send us any questions, feedback, anything of that nature to BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.